174 Tango Whiskey, 2.6 for 3000, 140 on Hatter.
Said that today was pretty pathetic. That the Flyers really needed to sell off.
I mean, anybody with two goddamn brain cells should be able to figure. Except these goddamn few people in my mentions that just love it to be positive all the time. Like, I'm pretty sure most people that have any level of critical thinking whatsoever should be able to realize, like, you're pretty much backed into a wall here. There's
you
not
are
a lot
backed
of
into a wall.
There's not a lot of ass kissing left to go around.
I mean, even O'Connor said, you know, and I think Charlie's coverage has been pretty good with the current state of the Flyers. He had an article that that came out just before the trade deadline and said it would take a failure of epic proportions on the part of the Flyers front office for JVR, who is very much not in the organization's future plans, to still be in Philadelphia come the weekend.
Oh, God. No. I have news for you.
Yeah, news for you. I guess some of us predicted the epic failure.
You know, now that JVR is still here, we can, they still their property. They can offer him a contract at any time.
Yeah, they could. They could.
They're gonna bring
the only
back.
Thing is that it doesn't go with constantly saying this. We want to get younger, And I get that. But how can we make this happen? Because, yes, you're right, Dan. There still is light at the end of
this. There's still light at the end of this JVR tunnel.
I want him to get re-signed so bad.
There is a part of me that at this point, I think for the lulls, I would
so
be
ridiculous.
Down.
Yeah. I want to see him dig even deeper. I want to see him get even worse. I want to see this train roll further down the mountain off the track.
Oh, God.
So is that, yeah. I think there's a shot. I mean, maybe. I mean, the problem was they tried so hard to trade him.
Did they really try that hard to trade him, Mike?
Maybe not that hard. But maybe the only thing that makes this happen is if the agent comes back to Fletcher and says, look, my client is interested in staying with the team on a team-friendly deal.
It would need to be team-friendly, like $1 million or something like that. Like, bare minimum just for him to stick around.
I mean, there's a shot. Like, I mean, the interest in JVR was pretty low to begin with.
Yeah.
So maybe if the agent understands that and it's like, look, there's no way in fuck we're going to get a deal elsewhere. Let's just see if we can make some hay with the Flyers because he's already there.
Yep. I could see it.
And maybe that works. That's the best thing. If who is JVR's agent? I don't know if he's with he's not with like Alan Walsh or anything with Octagon.
Probably not.
I think it was something else.
James Van Reems, Dank agent.
If they bring him back,
yeah. What do you think about all this, man? Do you think you know?
His agent
is
Sean Hunwick.
Sean Hunwick. Okay.
Hunwick.
So you got to think that Hunwick's been doing this for a while, right? He's been JVR's agent for quite some time, I think.
Probably.
That he's got to say, look, like, we're not going to test the market, James. The market's no good for you. Our best bet is to try to come back to the Flyers on a team-friendly deal, on a short-term team-friendly deal. I say, and James says, okay, yeah, you're probably right. So then Hunwick goes back to
Fletcher.
Oh,
he's also Joel Farabee's agent.
Oh, perfect. Nice.
JVR, Joel Farabee, Alec Martinez, Luke Glendening, John Merrill, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, a couple other random guys I've never heard of before.
Awesome.
So there you go.
Yeah, I'd love it if he came back. It'd be fantastic for the organization.
Great. At this point, they may as well just to see how fucking far they can push people's sanity, but... God,
I'd take it. Yeah, I'm still fingers crossed. Oh, if it happens, I'm gonna be thrilled.
And we joked about it and called it, and other sites were tweeting it out.
Have as since they leached off of that idea.
Idea.
So some other thing with the team, and we had mentioned this, I think I mentioned this in some DMs to you guys, is that there's been some quotes from like Tortorella and Lawton about kind of the state of the team. And I'm getting this theme as I'm reading and listening to these, that the coach and the players, I think, are unnecessarily taking on responsibility for the lack of interest or the performance, you know, of what's going on. There's a quote from Scott Lawton, and he said, "It is what it is." He said that we got to start playing better to get our fans in here. And Tortorella said, "Don't blame anybody else. Blame us. We made our own bed," that sort of stuff. And, you know, I guess I can appreciate that from the sense that, like, they're kind of unifying, but this is really not a coaching problem. This is not a player problem specifically with these guys. It's not like in the Giroux era, for example. Like, I think that a lot of those guys were just not prepared to play. I think there were locker room problems. They came out flat constantly. There were issues in terms of not getting enough out of some of those guys. I still don't think they were good enough to begin with by any means, but there were issues in that culture aspect that Torts is fixing or has fixed. But now, I don't think that exists. I think you have a coach that's getting what he can out of the players. I think by and large, the players are playing pretty hard. They're not dogging it out there. They're just not any good. They don't have any talent. And I just find it to be a little bit off and a mischaracterization of the problems for the players and the coach to think that this is not about Torts squeezing enough out of this roster, when the blame is really on the front office for what they're doing. And I don't know, did you guys get that feeling when you heard some of these guys talking about what's going on as well?
So when I read those quotes, it's very odd. You know, this is what Torts has been touching on. It's probably not going to be a simple or easy process. We're in it now, and this is the hand we're dealt. You've got to deal with the best you can, and your character really comes out in situations like this. And it's like, that, the players are not responsible for what's going on here. You know, the players are doing their goddamnedest right now to have a season. It's the lack of talent on the roster, right? But it seems odd that Tortorella is kind of selling that patience to the players. I think it's one thing to come out and be like, "Hey guys, it's a fucking process," to the fan. You know, when you're selling shit like that to the fans, it's one thing, but I don't know, throwing cold water on your players unintentionally, being like, "Hey guys, it's going to take forever. Don't get inspired or anything." I don't know. I think it's a weird approach to that. I don't know what Torch is looking to accomplish there, but
kind of defeating.
Yeah. It's like, you know,
it's like what a rebuilding coach says, where it's like, "None of you guys are going to be here anymore, so see ya."
Yeah, you're in for the fucking long haul here. It's like you're ready to suffer, and you're not going to be good anytime soon. What a weird fucking thing, when the on-ice play, for the most part, has been the one kind of positive takeaway of the season, is the way the players have been playing, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I just think that that was a weird one for the way Lawton phrased that about Tortorella was definitely odd. You know, what Tortorella's preaching them may be different, but it's not on the players at all. Not by any means. It's your goddamn incompetent general manager and owner that are fucking this up for you. Not by no means is it the roster players at this point.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think that one of the things that I definitely do agree with a lot of the people on Twitter is they are trying. The player, it's not a lack of effort.
No.
For the most part. They're not getting crushed, like, you know, game in and game out like they were last year. Last year, for whatever reason, was more painful. This year, it's like there's this less caring. Like what did we really expect to be that different? They're keeping games close. They're within one, maybe two goals. The bulk of the games are like that. They're in there. They're within reach. John Tortorella has, with his system and with his attitude and with the overhaul, I really can't blame any players. Like, how many times can you sit there and say, oh, Rasmus Ristolainen was fucking terrible that whole game. Oh, Ivan Provorov was terrible that whole game. There might have been a play here or there. But, I mean, ultimately, it's everybody's playing as well as they probably could.
More or less.
Like, yeah. I saw people shitting on Owen Tippett. And it's like, how are you shitting on Owen Tippett? The guy's got 20 goals. Like, the guy had no expectations. Before he even came here, when he was rumored to be in that deal, everybody was just butchering
him. Yep.
Like, he wasn't worth a goddamn thing. And you know what? I like what he's brought this year.
I think he's been their second best forward behind Konechny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's done well this year for his progression as a player. And yeah, I'm not upset with Owen Tippett.
He's a young guy. Like, you know what? He's going to go through, you know, games where, you know what, it's not going his way or whatever. But overall, he's skating. He's putting the effort. He's generating shots on goal. I'm not going to begrudge him for that. Like, you look at the talent that's on this team, and that's why, like, Kevin Hayes, I'm not a Kevin Hayes fan. I hated when they got him. I thought they overpaid for him. I didn't like the contract. But you know what? He's had a good year. I know he was benched twice, but he is an all-star. And overall, what else do you want from the guy? He's not a 1C. He's not even a 2C in my mind. He's a 3C. He's playing well. Travis Konechny, you know what? I don't like the guy. I could easily trade him. Wouldn't matter to me. He's had a good year. You can't ask for very much more than what he's given.
Yeah.
It would be stupid to ask for more. It's not realistic. What do you want from Carter Hart? He's doing what he can. Mm-hmm. He's got a lackluster team in front of him. Like, yeah, and he's still at over, you know, 9-10 save percentage or whatever it is. He's doing what he can.
Yeah. This isn't a situation, where the players are, you know, drastically underperforming, they're not prepared, where the coach isn't getting enough out of them. And that's the thing, is I just don't see this as, I think it's a mischaracterization of blame. I understand, you know, that Torts is probably trying to deflect some heat off the front office here, and say, you know, it's us, we got to play better, we got to do better. It's like, no, you don't, John. Like, you don't have to play better. You don't have to coach better. You're doing fine. Like, these players are doing the best they can. It is on the front office 100% now. You've changed, by and large, John Tortorella has changed the culture. Like, these guys are coming in a lot hungrier than they were in the past. I'm finding them to be more motivated. I'm finding them to be more prepared to play games. You know, there's certainly deficiencies in the roster. There's major deficiencies in talent, but in terms of that culture thing, like, they have that there. So when I see Torts come out and say, oh, well, this is on us, and, you know, we got to put on, you know, a better product for the fans. Like, no, like, you don't. It is the front office that needs to figure out what players and what ingredients, so to speak, need to be here. That's the problem. So it's just, that line needs to be very, very clear. And I feel like Torts is kind of giving a company line there, but at some point, you know, you got to separate and say, we're doing our job, now you do yours. And that stuff's starting to piss me off a little bit, because he shouldn't be covering for them anymore.
Yeah, he's definitely a company man, which, I don't know. It's, I get it. It's your shtick. It's your gimmick. It's your job to kind of keep your head down. But considering he's playing, you know, mouthpiece for the organization at this point, and he has to realize what's going on. This guy's too goddamn smart to think that it's the player's fault. You know, like, I don't know. Hopefully there's more behind the scenes going on than he lets on to the public here.
I think with maybe like another off season, once Torts is in there with more meetings and kind of, rather than last year, he was just kind of integrating and figuring out how he's going to coach the team. Now once he's involved with more of these meetings, he understands how fucking incompetent these people are. Perhaps with just another offseason under his belt, when he comes back, you know, in the following year here, there's a little bit more vitriol, a little bit more demarcating us versus them of this is not a coaches and players problem any longer. And, you know, he's still kind of in that infancy stage in his first year where he might be kind of tagging along that line where hopefully that stops soon because they just shouldn't be doing it anymore.
He's too old school.
Yeah.
He'd do it internally. I mean, I guess there's a chance that happens in the off season because Torts is savvy enough to do it internally, but he would be relatively transparent about it after the fact. Like, for example, if he goes in the off season and is like, this guy's a fucking moron, we need him out, and he makes that known internally, it stays internally. And they make the change. And then, you know, when he has a press conference in September in training camp or something, he may come out and not give a ton of detail, but he probably would say something along the lines of, I felt that the organization was not, not going the right direction, and I needed to make my voice heard, and some of the other folks involved in leadership agreed with me. And we decided to make a change. Like, he might give you a little bit of something. I don't know if he's going to say the guy's a moron, but but there could be something like that. And the reason why it also makes sense here too is that Torts doesn't give a shit. It's not like he's like a brand new head coach, and if he says something, he's, you know, wrong, he's never going to get a coaching job again. His reputation's going to suffer.
He's going to retire
if he makes a big stink. He doesn't give a shit. This is his last coaching job, he said, for his career, which makes sense. So, you know, if he feels something's not right, he's going to speak up internally about it, which he has in a lot of other capacities, apparently, so far. Maybe he's the savior here that comes in and effectuates some change. I don't know. But if anyone's going to do it, it's John Tortorella.
It's weird. There's such a weird dynamic here between these two. Yeah. And it's like oil and water. Like, yeah. They just don't mix.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to, I mean, I had this thought the other day too, is Torts, and this is just too much behind the scenes stuff, is he mentally wired to try to start making these like GM decisions and stuff? Like, I get the sense that Torts wants to be a coach and a coach only, and what makes him happy and what makes him satisfied is when he gets a group of players, regardless of their talent level. He doesn't care if, you know, they have low ceilings, all 12 forwards, so on and so forth. But if he can max out all of their capabilities and get everybody to buy in and establish a good culture and get everybody to play at their maximum, that's good enough for him. And he feels like he's accomplished his job at head coach, and that's where the line stops. And anybody else who's brought in or brought out is not in his mental state. That's for the GM to do. I'm afraid that that's the other side of the coin here, is that he's limited in terms of his ability to actually form the roster. It's the GM in the front office needs to get me my ingredients, and I just cook with them, so to speak. And I'm not going to go out to the store and find new ingredients, but I'm going to make the ingredients you give me taste as good as possible, so to speak. And that's where I'm not sure if Torts is going to cross that line. It's just another way to look at it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a little too behind the scenes, I guess, to ever kind of know from our perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, he seems like a company man that isn't going to make the waves, but he also seems like a loud, boisterous asshole who's not afraid to let his feelings be known. So maybe he does, you know, kind of during the summer and make some things happen. I really don't know where that line is. Like, I could definitely see kind of either scenario being a plausible one.
I'll mention this only because I thought it was interesting. So yeah. David Poyle in Nashville is retiring.
Yeah.
And they announced Barry Trotz as the next guy in Nashville. Now, he's been in Nashville for a long time. First head coach in franchise history, was there for a long time. He kind of established and set that culture and the great defensive pipeline that they have and the system that he put in place. A lot of that is still there, and that's from him. I don't know if John Tortorella is a GM, but do you guys foresee, and this is just spitballing here, do you guys foresee a time when maybe the message of let's try, especially with no talent, starts to get old in year like three. And then all of these people come out the woodwork and say, oh, he shouldn't be the coach. And you can't fire him because you're paying him a lot of money. And you're still paying AV and you're still doing all this stuff. I don't see him as a GM. But does anybody else exemplify Philadelphia Flyers hockey like John Tortorella? Wouldn't that be like a good president of hockey ops? A guy who twice a year, you know, in the preseason and at the trade deadline comes out and says, you know what, this is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to be. And then, you know what? He loves Danny Briere. Maybe he puts Danny Briere as his GM. And then together they pick a coach to do things the right way. I mean, I don't think it's happening.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he's already made his retirement known, that this is his last one and he's out, I think he just wants to go back to his farm and get kicked in the face by a horse all day. I don't think he's overly interested in pursuing a upper management career. Maybe he could be an advisor or something like that. If you want, if one of these fucking 80-year-olds finally croaks, you can replace them with Tortorella. But, you know, I don't know if he's got, you know, the fast track to being a, you know, front office guy in his future.
Yeah, as much as I'd like that, and I do think he could be good at it, he strikes me as too hands-on to tolerate a front office position. He'd want to be down there with the players and saying what to do and, you know, trying to manage it on the ground rather than making more high-level decisions. Now, you know, that could change. And, you know, I don't, you know, Barry Trotz wasn't here, but I don't know, just from afar, I get the sense that Trotz may make an easier transition to that type of role, and kind of relinquish some of the control to a coaching staff, and take a step back that way. But with Torts, I'm not sure I see that kind of mentality, but hell, I think it's a great idea, Manny, and I'd like to see it. I mean, almost anybody would be better than the folks in place now, but I do think that Tortorella would be a nice face to have in the front office when he retires from coaching.
If he leaves on good terms, you know, and doesn't get canned halfway through or anything like AV or any of these previous coaches, if he sees through this contract and this team is better than when he found it, you know, he should have, the Flyers should have some debt to serve him there if he really wanted to stick around and do it. I mean, he could. I'm sure nobody's going to say no, but yeah, I'm kind of with Mike. I don't know if he fits the role of somebody that's comfortable sitting in a cushy office all day long.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, he is hands-on. That's true. I think just to kind of close out that thread is, we know that the Flyers apparently offered Trotz a lot of money to be
I'm still salty
coach.
About that one. God damn it, did I want Barry Trotz on this team.
And now we know why he said
yeah.
Because he wanted to be general manager and he wanted it to be with Nashville. And he wanted to kind of finish where he started in the National Hockey League. It's an interesting kind of coming full circle. Hextall or Fletcher? Who's more to blame? That's been a big thing on Twitter from a couple of people who just seem to be all over the place on Twitter, getting into everybody's conversations.
Believe it or not, it's... It's hard because it did start with Hextall. The foundation that he laid was incredibly flawed. But enough time has passed and shit just continues to spiral out of control where there's a significant amount of blood on Chuck Fletcher's hands. It's I don't know whose official decision it was within the front office for Fletcher to carry on the original Hextall plan of we're going to win with this core of Konechny and Provorov and Sanheim and all this shit. That was a horrible idea at the time, you know, who kind of doubled down with that in 2020 and 2021. And like, why didn't you bail on this at the first sign of trouble versus run it into the ground? So I don't know who was responsible for that. I don't know if that's a Dave Scott call or an advisor call or Dean Lombardi's dumbass call, whatever the fuck it was. But they're both equally responsible for the state of the franchise, just in different reasons. You know, Hextall did not have a plan. He didn't. And I still see people say that. Well, you know, Hextall at least had a plan where Fletcher does not. Hextall was a better snake oil salesman than Fletcher was. Hextall was better at getting you to believe that he had a plan. And if you still believe he had a plan, then he's the fucking snake oil salesman. He got you. You know, but... Yeah, no, no. I think these days it's Fletcher. Just because, again, enough time has passed there where... He's responsible for the current state of the team and should have pulled the ripcord on this shit years ago. But it's this bad because Hextall was such shit at laying the foundation and it did not end up being what everyone had kind of hyped it up to be. If his drafting was better, if he landed two or three legitimate top guys and not a fucking Konechny and Provorov, you know, maybe this would be a different story right now. And he pursued the roster and he tore down properly and, you know, got rid of Giroux and Voracek when they were at their peaks. You know, you could have rebuilt something from that roster and made it good. And then Fletcher could have theoretically carried him over the goal line. But, you know, it was flawed from the beginning. It got even fucking worse under Fletcher. And it's just a complete goddamn pile of shit these days because both of them combined over the last 10 years to do it. And that's why nobody separates the eras, right? Nobody considers it the Hextall era. There's one giant long pile of shit that's been going on exactly. Since 2014, right? It's hard to differentiate that because there was no clean break between the two. But yeah, it's Hextall fucked up first and then Fletcher just made it worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're both bad general managers in various ways with some similarities. I think they both are obsessed with this one foot in, one foot out approach, which is a horrible overlap to have. I will say after seeing Fletcher here for about 5 years at this point and seeing Hextall here for 5 years as well, it's almost the same as you mentioned, Dan. The one thing that Hextall did better than Fletcher is I think he was at least pretty decisive with what he was doing. It was stupid and wrong a lot of times, but he was fairly decisive on his moves.
He stayed on his path. He didn't need
acquiescence from 14 people in the front office to, you know, to take a dump every day or something, which Chuck Fletcher does. I mean, the guy's not decisive. He's not confident. He needs reaffirmation from all of the people around him. He takes forever to get anything accomplished. And I think that is such a huge problem when you're a general manager of a sports team that you can never recover from that. And I think Hextall made a shit ton of bad decisions. I think he set the team up horribly in a variety of ways, but he was decisive in what he was doing. And I think that differentiating factor is the key to me that probably makes Fletcher a worse general manager than Ron Hextall was. At least that's my thinking right now on the topic, but that's a good comparison there. Manny, where do you stand on that?
I think that there is a lot of truth to Hextall's drafting really put the Flyers behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
And it's not good when you're playing behind the eight ball. You want to be ahead of the curve, not behind the curve. That said, and it is bad, but Fletcher has been here for 4.5 years. Like, you have to start taking steps. Even if it's, you know, one piece 1 year, another piece another year, and another piece the year after that, you have to put your stamp on the franchise. And really his stamp was Kevin Hayes, Niskanen. And then Niskanen fucked off after the bubble. And then everything else he's done since, the Ellis trade didn't work. You know, Tony DeAngelo, stupid move. You know, the whole aggressive retool and then stabilize. Like, nothing that he's done has been of any substance, really. Hasn't done anything. We've gotten worse in terms of playoff appearances. As much as people say you don't want politics and sports to mix, I'm finding that, especially with the Flyers, and the fans, they are mixing the two. In politics, you get the whole, you know, well, Joe Biden's cleaning up the stuff that Donald Trump did. And when Donald Trump was in office, it was, well, I got to fix all the stuff that Obama did. And when Obama was in office, it was, well, I got a huge mess to clean up from George W. Bush. And when George W. Bush was in office, it was the Clinton. That only works, you know, the first year and a half that you're in office. And then after that, you got to start owning some stuff and you got to start doing things for yourself. And you have to put your stamp on something because it's on you now. Like, there's people out there on Twitter that are like, well, Hextall and this and that, terrible drafting and this and that. Any team would have been in a bad situation. Yeah. And you know what? We fired him already. We can't fire him again. It's over. He's gone. He's with another organization. It's Fletcher's job. He took this job. And by the way, when he took this job, in his opening press conference, he referenced the great job that Chuck Fletcher did stocking the cupboard.
Hexy, yeah.
This was, oh yeah, this is like, I won't have to do shit. I can just come here and all the stuff that Ronald did and all those draft picks, and I just have to buy some time. And
yep, that was the thought process.
I'll be the king. I'll take all the credit, even though he did all the work. Well, now the shoe's on the other foot, because the cupboard really wasn't that stocked, and we know that now. But you did jack shit to actually address that. You didn't trade any of them. You didn't do anything. Until it was way too late. And this is where we're at.
Yeah. It was a combination of the two, and Fletcher's been here long enough where you can't really blame Hextall. You know, he set this up for failure, but Fletcher was the one who really sank the fucking ship. So
what a horrible back to back. I mean, gosh. I mean, to have those guys just take up a good decade of the team is just unbelievable that that would happen. And I mean, the rationale for firing Hextall, I mean, their timing was ridiculous on it. I mean, they fired him in November. I mean, what the fuck are you doing? You either know you're going to go with him or you're not. It was a stupid time to fire him. And then hiring another general manager in Chuck Fletcher in December of that same year is also stupid, because he's just coming in and babysitting until the off season, essentially. So, you know, it's like, I don't know if they really had a good search that went on. They kind of, I don't know, made a knee jerk reaction to fire Hextall, or something got set off with them. They couldn't tolerate him anymore. And then, because they didn't have a GM, they just kind of found Fletcher, who was like an advisor for the Devils or something at the time, and brought him in.
It was only a couple days difference, I think. I think Hextall fired on, the 26th, and I think Fletcher was hired the 3rd of December or something like that. It was
fairly
a week
quick,
or two.
You're right. Yeah. And usually, you know, if you're gonna change general managers, you do it at a time when you can thoroughly vet
at the end of
who
the season and see what the candidates were. Yeah.
Yeah, you bring in a new candidate, you vet them, you interview them, you think about this, you know, the style of person you want. You're going to have candidates because there's turnover at that time and whatnot, and you bring in somebody that makes sense. But the Flyers were just in a fucking rush at that point because of the timing that was all on them. And they kind of fucked themselves because they said, well, shit, we just fired Hextall. We need somebody now. Shit, oh, there's this guy up in Jersey who's an advisor, used to be the Wild GM. We'll just bring him in. You know, they didn't really even interviewed Bill
Bobby
Zito.
Bobby Clark's friend.
Yeah, he's Bobby Clark's friend. You know, he had him as an intern back in 93 with Florida or some shit like that. And it's just like, they interviewed Bill Zito too, and they didn't even give him a real interview. It was a fucking, it was a virtual interview. They couldn't even fly him in and actually give him the time of day. It's just, I think that they put themselves in a compromised position during that transition, and they're paying the price again for it because they didn't vet general managers
probably
properly.
Probably should have fired Hextall and put like Dean Lombardi in a fucking interim role for the rest of the season.
Or Homer. Or leave Homer in.
Homer,
for the season.
Yeah, whoever was still around at the time. And wait till the end of the year, see who the fuck is out there, interview 10 or so candidates, and figure what the fuck out. But you hired
exactly.
somebody 2 weeks later because he was besties with fucking Bobby Clark. God damn.
Yeah, if you trace it back. Yeah, I mean, that's the that's part of the issue. That's why we had such a ridiculous back-to-back, I think.
So speaking of the back-to-back, and I agree with you, Dan. I like a lot of fans. This Hextall slash Fletcher era for me is one and the same.
Yep.
It's the same era because we haven't experienced any tangible success for like 2-3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Like there's been nothing. Right. There's been nothing. Right. It's the same muck that we've been in.
Yep. There's no defining difference between the two. Great, you made the first round a couple more times under Hextall, but then you got your shit rocked by the fucking Capitals in that godforsaken series, and it was even worse a couple years later against the Penguins, and just, you know, the overarching shit era, and this is, you know, leads into the attendance conversation and shit like that, where it's not just a couple years of bad hockey. This is a decade of shit that people are tired of fucking losing, right? And it just so happens to keep getting worse. But, you know, that overarching problem of attendance and fans leaving and all that shit, this is not just a couple bad years under Fletcher or a couple bad years under Hextall. It combined for one long fucking decade. That was 2014! Okay, we're in 2023
totally
now,
right.
Nine fucking years ago. Crazy.
This era, I have a really hard time separating the two. Does Chuck Fletcher get another job after this? Whether
he'll get
it's
an advisor
right
role
now
somewhere or something, they always do.
Or
if he sticks
like
as president, he may ride this out in the sunset.
Peter Chiarelli's around. I'm sure Randy Carlyle's still out there somewhere. Like, they're all just in other front offices playing in the background roles. He'll get a job somewhere.
The phrase from the press conference on the trade deadline that got me, that pissed me off, was when Chuck, and again, people are going to say, well, he said the right thing, is when Chuck Fletcher said, listen, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to build it the right way. No shortcuts. We're in it for the long haul. Uh-huh. We're gonna do, and it's like, dude, this is Ron Hextall.
Yep.
He's pulling Ron Hextall fucking lines. He's got the handbook.
That does appear to be what they're reverting to. Yeah.
It's the same fucking thing from we're going back to the Ron Hextall thing now.
Yep. You're trying to sell fans of a rebuild, despite the fact that you're not actually going to rebuild. You're right back where we fucking started from after 10 years.
Yeah, it's just different dressing, you know. Yep. It's the same rotten food, and you know you're putting your ranch dressing on it instead of your Thousand Island or whatever. You know, it's the same fucking food.
Good. Fucking team.
I people reach out on DM on Twitter and they say like, oh, how come you're in Toronto and you're a Flyers fan? And the answer is always, well, Eric Lindros. Truthfully, if there was a second response, it would have been the fans. Like sitting here in Toronto, the Wachovia Center, the FU Center, the First Union Center, all the way back in the day, all those kinds of things. You would see the fans were rowdy. They were vocal. There was a dude with a fucking Darth Vader mask on, like right there in the front and center yelling at people. There was the fat guy dancing in the aisles and stuff. There was the dancing guy. There's the guy that went and fought Ty Domi. Like it was a place where holy shit, you're going into Philadelphia. Dude, the fans are going to eat you alive. They're going to be calling your room at fucking 4 a.m. and ordering you pizza. Like, you're not going to get a good night's sleep. You are in for a ride when you come into Philadelphia, because the people here care about the Flyers. And now it's like they've just sucked that all out.
Chased
the corporate stuff. The team on the ice sucks. You know, they've just sucked the life out of that building. And you know what? The Rangers fans, fuck, good on them. They came into our barn and they showed you how it's done. What do we got?
I agree. I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of roster questions at the season ticket holder meeting at the town hall. People are too scared to ask. You're probably going to get a bullshit response anyway, but you could try to push them. And like another example that I had that was interesting was somebody came with like a spreadsheet of Andrew McDonald statistics and was just grilling Dave Hackstall on it. Just one thing after another about why this guy sucks. And it was phenomenal. And then the next year I was at one and McDonald came up again, but it was before the session started. Some guy was sitting in the front row and I just like had just walked in the back. And the guy was like physically having like a seizure, yelling at Holmgren across the way about the McDonald contract. He's like, it was like, I heard bits and pieces, but the guy was, you know, shaking like really violently about, you gave him this contract, you screwed the franchise, we can't get this guy out of here. Like all this stuff is, crazy. Absolutely crazy.
God, I remember when the McDonald contract was the biggest fucking problem we had. Huh? How good we had it back then.
I have noticed that there is a subsection of Flyers fans that for whatever reason, and listen, they by all means they have every right to think and feel the way that they do, is they're like, well, I don't like, you know, podcasts that are super negative. So I know that sometimes the Brotherly Pod is mentioned. A lot of the time, Snow the Goalie is mentioned.
Yeah, they take a lot of heat for that stuff.
But the way that where I sit on it is,
what the fuck is there to be positive about? Like, honest to God here, give me
something.
You're
not ripping a contending team.
Yes.
It's not like this is the Bruins and we're fucking nitpicking dumb shit. Give me fucking something. Let's play a game. Let's be positive about something. Let's list some positives of the Flyers. That is not prospects. I don't give a shit about Cutter Gauthier. Until he's in the NHL producing, I don't fucking care. We've played and failed at this game for 10 fucking years. Don't give a shit about prospects. And I don't want to hear about menial shit either. Morgan Frost has 20 points this year. Ooh! 6 years after he was drafted. Don't fucking care. Give me legitimate franchise-building positives that the Flyers have going for them right now. Go.
I mean, we've actually already mentioned this multiple times on shows, and that's really just the culture of Tortorella.
You got Tortorella, seems to be, and you've got good goaltending. Hartner Urson should be good for a long time.
And we've mentioned that all year.
Other than
we
that?
Have really not equivocated off
what the
of
fuck?
That.
What's positive?
Yeah.
What is a building block positive that the Flyers have going for them right now? I hear that, oh, they were so negative. I'm just like, motherfucker, yeah, we may be negative, but it's not going out of the way to be negative. I'm just commentating on the fucking shitstorm that's in front of me right now. Like,
exactly.
That gets me so fucking angry. Oh, you're so negative. Just fuck off. Yeah, but, people call me negative during the Hextall era, too, because I gave up on his process after a couple of years. But you know what? Fucking, I was right. I gave up on that shit because it didn't lead to anywhere. I was right!
The alternative is you listen to an overly positive...
The jerk off this organization every time because they have press passes to lose.
Everything is right and everything's good. And I've
German Rubsov is a great player. We can't go anywhere without him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've even seen, even today, there was an overly positive person, fanboy, if you will. And somebody said, I believe it was Bill Matz, who was writing some things about how Fletcher's incompetent and he's inept. And everything was shown at this trade deadline of how bad he is. And he doesn't deserve the job. And there was people out there going, yeah, well, wait till the off season. There's going to be moves in the off season.
Yep, I still get them. And yep. I have my mentions, like, too.
And it's like, guys, we've been doing this for years. Oh, don't worry at the draft. Oh, don't worry at the draft. At the draft, things are going to happen. You're going to see the Flyers are going to move. Something's going to happen at the draft. And then the draft comes and goes. Oh, free agency. Don't worry.
I had people tell me for weeks, you cannot judge Fletcher until the fucking trade deadline actually rolls around on Friday. You can't judge the guy because it doesn't matter whether or not he moved JVR. I'm judging Chuck Fletcher on the last fucking 4.5 years that he was here. It doesn't matter fucking one day at the deadline whether he moved JVR for a fourth round pick or not. It doesn't matter. The fact that he failed to do that is even worse than if they just fucking, oh my God, these people.
And that's the thing is, so you listen to the overly positive stuff, but there's an opposite effect to that too, where you're listening to positive stuff and you're hearing all good things, but the team hasn't made the playoffs in 3 straight years.
For the first time in 31 years, by the way.
So how positive is it? Is it really a reflection of what's actually going on?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the commentary is meant to mirror the state of the team. And if you're not, and I, the commentary that we provide and a lot of others, I think, is lockstep with the state of the organization. If you're not looking for commentary that mirrors what the organization is doing and the status of the organization, there are a couple other things for that. But that's not what we do. That's not what a lot of other podcasts do. You know, that is a different type of coverage. It is marketing almost. It is like a hype machine, so to speak, for this. That's not what we do. And if you're looking for that sort of thing, then that's not really, you know, a podcast about the Flyers. It's it has a sales arm to it.
Some circle jerk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fair man. I do consider myself, like, give me something to be. If this team looked like the Bruins right now, do you think we would be sitting here talking shit all time? No. Do you think we'd be sitting here questioning the general manager? No. Because there's a good fucking hockey team. I've been doing this for a long fucking time, and I've never had to have long, prolonged stretches of saying nice things about this team because they fucking sucked for a decade now. It's just like, the last time they were good was, I was fucking in high school. You know, it's just, it's crazy that, I don't know, maybe we're negative, but at the end of the day, I don't think anything we say is unjust or unfair or going out of our way to be negative. I just think there are so few fucking positives that there's no point even talking about it. Morgan Frost scoring 20 points this season doesn't fucking do it for me. Great, he's playing fine. He's probably going to get re-signed now, which is going to different problem for a different day. But whatever, Owen Tippett is fine. Great. Let's fucking bring in players to make them better. But we can't fucking do that because Chuck Fletcher's a goddamn incompetent asshole. But fuck, this whole thing, these people just fucking get under my skin like nothing else. These goddamn positive assholes that shit on me for being negative. When in reality, all I'm doing is just stating the fucking facts. If you want to get mad at me for being negative rather than the team for being shit, I don't know what to tell you, my guy.
And it gets to a point where it's like, well, you never say anything positive about them. Well, listen, there are positives. Noah Cates is playing really well, and I like him. And I didn't think that I would like Noah Cates, but you know what? He's shown me stuff. Owen Tippett shown me stuff. I like this. I appreciate it. I did not like Rasmus Ristolainen and the re-signing. He's played well the last 3 months, man. Like, would I still want him re-signed? Probably not, but I'm not going to shit all over the guy. He's playing well. He's as good as can be, right? I'd like more points, but overall, he's not doing the boneheaded things that everybody talks about. The problem is that Noah Cates succeeding and exceeding expectations and Owen Tippett exceeding expectations is overshadowed by the dark cloud of the stupidity and the ineptitude surrounding this team.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's overshadowed by the Provorov thing that happened in January. It's overshadowed by, you know, the lawsuit with Jim McCrossin and Sal, right? It's overshadowed by what happened at the trade deadline. It's overshadowed by, it's a retool, Charlie. These things are all just smothering the goodness and the good things that are in this team. Yeah. It's not that we're willfully ignoring them. It's called, we got to talk about the things that everybody's talking about. And unfortunately, people are talking about bad things with the Flyers.
Yeah, these positives are of very limited consequence. And you can't devote 60 minutes, you know, on an episode or something to discussing the virtues of Noah Cates.
Yeah.
It's just not
bigger fish to
something
fry
that is in the wheelhouse. And yeah, like, you know, we mention a couple of things here and there for sure, but it's just not something that demands attention anything more than a couple of minutes here and there. Yeah. And I agree. I don't know what to tell you. If you want more of that stuff and you want an emphasis on that, it's not mirroring the state of the team. It's not really covering the true state of affairs. And, you know, if you want to listen to paid employees of the team tell you about their organization, more power to you.
Yeah, there are pods out there that'll jerk off this team and organization from team paid shills and fans with press passes. Go do that shit, man. This brand isn't, listen, I am fully aware the Dan the Flyer Friend Band and the Brotherly Puck and Brotherly Pod, it's not for everyone. I get it. You know, my approach is can be callous. I understand that. But at the end of the day, I do not believe that I am unfair in my takes in the way that I handle this. There's nothing to fucking be positive about. Give me a team that's good and I'll say good things. But I haven't had that yet, and it sure doesn't look like I'm going to have it any fucking time soon. So, you know, if this was the Devils, if this was the Bruins, if this was the Avalanche, it'd be a different story. But, man, we're talking about a team that just fucking sucks and has sucked for a long time. So, no, I'm not going to sit here and fucking jerk off Noah Cates for an hour and a half every night. Like, I got fucking better things to do, my guy. So, that just drives me nuts. Shit just fucking... I hate that after all these years. That's the one thing after all these years that can still get to me is when people start saying shit like that.
The you know what, though? The best example is the Pride Night. Like, you had a disaster of a Pride Night last year, and you railed on them for it.
Oh, yeah.
And this year, it was good, and you wanted, and you said it repeatedly. They did a good job. They actually thought things through. They actually took it seriously. They actually got, you know, artwork and jerseys, and they did this and they did that, and they auctioned it off. Charity and the whole nine yards. And Lawton got to meet people from those communities. But guess what?
And then Provorov goes all Leroy Jenkins on everybody and fucks it up. Yeah.
So what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to ignore?
Ignore the thing that happened? Became a nationwide story.
Minimize.
For multiple things. Yeah.
You're supposed to minimize it.
and
by the
and
time
really
that night
sucked.
Was over, the only thing to talk about was the negative Provorov stuff.
Yeah, and, it was a national story.
Yeah.
And you said it repeatedly. It's terrible that this is what people are going to be talking about because good stuff happened that day.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was something that, you know, it's meaningful for you. It's meaningful for a lot of people out there. But you didn't have the opportunity to give the proper plaudits and goodwill to the organization for saying it and doing those things because some other asshole took it upon themselves to make it about themselves.
Yep.
And you're just supposed to say, nope, oh, I'm going to ignore that. You can't ignore that. It's a fucking huge deal.
Yeah,
it's unreal.
Yeah.
And that's your fault? That's not your fault.
Of course it's my fault, Manny.
It's always everybody's fault.
My goddamn fault for everything.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I think that sort of those responses are fairly minimal, and it's probably a very limited...
We do get plenty of good feedback on this show, that's for sure. Yeah.
That is one thing, as we're now past midnight, listeners...
Yeah, 12:07. We've recorded for
four hours
total now. Yeah.
I will say that I really want to challenge the fans out there. I want you to think about how you feel during the Chuck Fletcher and the trade deadline and all that stuff. And I want you to hold that and put it in a ball and keep that in your heart. Don't forget it. Because last offseason, there was a lot of anger. And then the Tortorella hire happened, and then he said some good things. And it's not John Tortorella's fault, but the fans, they let it go.
Yep.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I haven't. I fucking hated this from the beginning.
Same here.
I love Torts. I love this message. But the organization doing nothing and bringing in D'Angelo and Delorier was stupid. And all the stuff and thinking that they could come back and be competitive.
They were very fickle, were the fans last year. And granted, it's a fickle group of fans anyway. But, you know, they were angry at the losses and, you know, the 9-0 blowouts to the Rangers on a night-to-night basis. And then there was, what, 9 or 10 weeks between the end of the season and the draft. And you went from there to there. I believe Torts was hired somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. Then you went to the draft. And everyone was annoyed they didn't get DeBrincat, but that's fine. You know, we got a free agency. And then Gaudreau happens, and they fucking pass on that one, and then they bring in Tony D'Angelo, and it's just like they were so hot and cold based on the moves rather than just staying fucking angry all the way through. Yep. Yeah.
And that's the one thing. I want people to remember, you know what? There's a lot of anger out there. And the comments during the press conference of Chuck Fletcher was like, you fucking clown, get the fuck, you fucking liar, Pinocchio, this, that, the other. You can't let that go.
You can't be fickle. You need to hold it. Like, you know, this is something I believe we talked about back right after Christmas when they won those few games against the fucking Ducks and shit like that. And all of a sudden the pressure was off.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you got to stuck a fucking, these minuscule wins don't mean anything. You know, you got to stick to the fucking anger through that whole thing. And that's when you see results. You can't be fickle at the slightest sign of goodness anymore.
Big picture.
Yes.
Like
yep.
this organization is always looking at, you know, through a little lens,
the micro instead of the macro.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's day-to-day, week-to-week, and then the overall plan, the yearly expectation, the yearly goals, none of that matters because they don't have any. Yep. They're just looking at it's game-to-game and week-to-week.
They think Torts can squeeze more out of this roster.
Oh, yeah. We can make Hayes a 100-point player, not a 70-point player.
I do think the most positive people seem to be more of the belief that a rebuild is possible, that they're going to draft somebody this year at 8th overall that's going to be fucking game-changing, and yeah, he's going to make it. Like, that seems to be the views of those people in the sense of a rebuild somehow coming to fruition and working out properly this time versus them necessarily being positive that the state of the organization is in a good path, you know, that they're going to, you know, make the playoffs next year and shit like that. So I don't know if anybody really believes this team. I'm sure they're fucking out there. Probably in my mention somewhere. I just have muted at this point. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many people. But that'd be a good Twitter poll. Save that one for tomorrow.
Yeah, I think there's a good – well, not good, but a subsection of people, I don't know, 5, 10, 15% of the fan base that thinks – that with the coaching staff we have and some of our young talent, that the team is capable of being a playoff bubble team. And that is good enough to maintain their interest. They've hit that and they're fine with it. I think that number is drastically going down and has gone down over the past couple of years, but I still think it's, I don't know, between 5 and 15% maybe of people. And you're fucking delusional. What the hell you're thinking or looking at. But yeah, that exists. I think that definitely exists.
What's the point?
Yeah, we're wasting time.
Back in Hextall territory. We're just going to draft. And this nothing is what we said. Yeah.
We had a show last summer and I was like, there's no point in doing the next year. We should just not do anything and then circle back next June and talk about the team then or something. Yeah. Cause there's no point. You're just wasting time. Now you're not achieving, like the team isn't achieving anything. Because they're not making any moves, and they're just plodding along and waiting to pick, 11th again or something, to get another player. It's just, what the fuck is the point here?
This whole season was I said it repeatedly, and you guys said it too, a waste of a season.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's people out there, the hardcore, like, we want to believe, but we need to know, Torts needs to know what we've got. And Chuck needs to know what we have to go forward. God. It's not a waste. This is necessary. And it's like, okay, so we just had a trade deadline where, you know, we need to separate the strong from the weak. We need to separate, you know, those that are going to be part of this thing going forward and those that got to go. And all we did was trade Zach McEwen, Patrick Brown, couldn't trade JVR. No roster players fucking went. What the fuck are we doing here? This is not separating the strong from the weak. This is doing the absolute fucking bare nothing.
Yep.
And you couldn't even do the bare minimum because the bare minimum was to trade JVR. And they couldn't even do that. I am shocked that they traded Patrick Brown. Fuck, they got a team to pay up a sixth round pick for that? Wow. That's a fucking medal right there. Take it.
And they spin it. They're like, oh, we're giving him a chance to compete for the playoffs.
Yeah. In
and like, oh, we wanted to give JVR an opportunity to go to the playoffs. Oh, wow. Oh, no, you know, what an altruistic motive, you know, like just fucking assholes. You know,
we want to do the right thing for him.
God. Yeah. 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 It's like, just shut up with that crap with these people. Yeah, well, JVR is going to score fucking 30 goals in the last four weeks.
If he gets hot all of a sudden, holy shit.
Dude.
Oh, he's going a hot streak.
That's actually a really good point.
I think he always does.
You should edit this into one of the episodes where we talk about JVR. If this fucking guy goes on a heater and puts like 10 goals in the last like 20 games, just to say to all the rest of the GMs, give him the finger.
Yeah. The more meaningless the games are, the more likely he will excel.
JVR revenge tour. He scores 2 goals on Dallas. He's gonna
score like 5 goals this weekend. Holy shit.
That would also help because we want the Flyers to re-sign him. So if he gets really hot and like, oh wow, he really came on strong at the end of the year, you know, we think that he's gonna carry that over.
Every team that was in on JVR, that's what I want.
So bad.
Carolina, boom! He's gonna be a game winner, 2 goals. Dallas, 2 goals.
There's nothing. Yeah,
pump them all, and then he's gonna get rewarded with a 3-year deal.
That'd be awesome. There's nothing else to hope for. So I just want
to
see
nothing.
Him just
nothing
twist
else
the
to
knife.
Hope for.
Yeah.
More I things I would hope for bigger than a JVR extension.
Yes. Jesus. So we need JVR to get hot as shit over the last month and then convince the Flyers to give him an extension because he's back.
Oh, God.
So good. Oh, I would love it. God, I want that extension so badly. Huge JVR fan.
JVR giving the fans this. Third round draft pick, huh? Who is this guy?
Oh God, Jesus Christ!
It's the man.
Takes out Patrick Kane. He's like, this is a wrecking ball.
God, yeah. Imagine if you are JVR. I mean, the fucking GM is so outwardly be like, we're trying to get the fuck rid of you, but you suck so bad. We couldn't make a deal. We could barely give you away.
What the fuck is that guy thinking right now? Yeah.
Yeah, God, that's tough to go through though, because usually that stuff behind closed doors. But it's been very out in the open with Fletcher because he's so worried about his job, I guess, and looking like a moron. So he's just closed all this shit.
You are so goddamn useless that nobody wants you.
That is true. Like, because he went out of his way to be like, he's a consummate pro. You know, we wanted to do the right thing for him. Fuck, nobody wanted him. Fucking
yeah.
Nobody give me. Yeah. You need a fourth round pick. Nobody would fucking give us a fourth.
Yeah. How do you square that? It's like, yeah, he's great, but the rest of the league thinks he's outright trash. Yeah.
He's a great guy. He's a pro. He's just shit. Nobody wants to give him anything for it. Fourth round pick. Nobody offered us even that. Oh man,
that's funny.
How bad is that? Oh god,
bad. So cool. All right, guys, I'm gonna sign off.
All right,
guys,
Mike.
Have a great weekend,
Dan.
Here. Enjoyed it tonight. Thanks a lot.
Stay sane.
Yeah. I'll see you guys later.
Keep all sharp objects out of arm's reach.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Cool.
All right, boys.
Good night.
See you. Bye bye.